It's the Shipping Container talking to you on a Monday, and we are bringing one special today. It is just your boys, Tony and Chris. It's kind of feels like Bachelor with the Boys, but just we're not talking Bachelor today. What's good, Tony?
What's up, Chris?
What is happening today? What's happening in our world today? Things are going crazy.
Today,
I don't know what we can tell the audience, but things are crazy.
Things are crazy. We are down a couple of Shipping Container misfits. Mike, Roy, obviously not here. Billy is out. Going to do the national show with Dan.
Billy is on his way to the Clevelander.
Stu Gotz is not there. He's in New York this week. So there's just a lot of moving pieces at the same time for being down a couple of members. So obviously, as Chris and I love to do, we love to bring you the local hour. So we're going to bring you a local hour that is going to be probably the best one of the week, at least the best one on Monday.
Maybe all quarantine. I got high hopes for this thing.
That's huge. And I'm a little upset because this weekend my sleep pattern was thrown off because of the UFC fight, because of a couple different things I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you want to start there, but how many times did you nod off during the first like 5 or 6 main card events?
Honestly, because I also ordered the fight, and I honestly didn't fall asleep. I fell asleep. I was more apt to fall asleep during the Masvidal fight. I feel like that
wow.
The fights leading up to it weren't that bad. Like, were actually better than the main event. Why do fights start so late? Like, what is the UFC doing? Like, why can't we like time this out better?
So you wanted the fight to start at, you wanted the Masvidal fight to start maybe at what, 10 o'clock?
No, I mean, the main event starts like the pay-per-view card starts at 10. So I'm thinking this thing needs like the main fight needs to be starting before midnight. That's like my only request. Mm. I'm not this like old person that needs it to be at 8 p.m. I just like, it's just ridiculous that it shouldn't start after 1 a.m. That's it. That's my rule.
So the weird thing is when you have doing it in different places, obviously, and most of the time it's either in Vegas or on the West Coast, you have to make that time adjustment for what's going on with the pay-per-views. But when you're doing it in Abu Dhabi and they're 8 or 10 hours ahead of the Eastern time zone, it becomes a little weird. And I felt really bad. And obviously, I was live tweeting the event, so were you. You were trying to get your tweets on the scroll, which was never going to happen. I'm sorry to tell you. I didn't want to burst your bubble at the moment, but that was never going to happen.
I had to be really big
in the MMA community.
First of all, I don't have a blue check mark. I made a joke. They're not going for jokes there. They want real people that are really chiming in. For the people that don't know, they were putting up little tweets in the bottom left-hand corner of the fight the whole time, just like people commenting on it. So I tweeted with the hashtag UFC251, I'm really hoping my tweet gets on the screen, because that would have been funny tweet to pop up on. Although it would have been funny if it came from somebody of higher note than me. Like if The Rock
exactly
tweeted that exact same thing. Like it's a funny tweet. It's just it can't come from me. That was
it can't
the only
go
problem.
From you, right? So you know who I felt really bad for, and we'll get into the fights and stuff later. But you know who I felt really bad for is the commentators, like John Anik, Michael Bisping. Oliveri, the sideline kind of commentator and stuff. It's over there. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. And they're still like going and doing hyped. All their stuff and being like super hyped. And I was sitting with my wife and watching the fight. She loves watching like UFC and stuff with me. So as she's there, like, wow, you know, these guys got to pick it up. They're doing, I'm like, Jen, you know, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning over there, right? They're on worldwide broadcast of TV with millions of people watching, and it's 4 in the morning.
Yeah, like, but I'm with your wife, dude. Like, they're training for this. Like, that's what they signed up for. Like, that's not an excuse. Like, oh, it's late here. Like, set your body clocks. Start going to sleep at different times. Let's go. This is it. Bring it.
Did you see when the main pay-per-view card started? Obviously, once we moved after, I think it was the Ozdemir fight, the last prelim into the main pay-per-view, and they pan over the octagon. There's just music. Nobody really saying anything. Then they bring in John Anik, and he's talking, but there's no sound. There's no nothing coming out. All you hear is background. Like, as a producer, I want to know, like, as a producer, how did you feel in that moment when both of them were talking? Nobody's, you know, there's no sound coming out. I was freaking out.
Yes, my hands started sweating. For sure. I was just like, oh my God, that's one of my favorite things now that we're in this world of producing and like creative stuff. So like anytime there's like malfunctions, I'm always my line to my wife is somebody in the production room is freaking out right now. Like I'm always letting her know when somebody is freaking out behind the scenes in a broadcast we're watching. It's honestly one of the most, it's honestly, I don't know if it's like, it's terrible of me. I get so much like joy out of it because I'm not feeling the stress. And I'm like, somebody's freaking out right now. It's great. I love
it. And you felt the stress before, so you know what it feels like having to go completely crazy. And that's what I was telling Jenny. I was like, look, that she's like, why does somebody need to be talking? I'm like, something's wrong when in the first 20 seconds of a broadcast, nothing is said. There is a big time problem. I can just imagine, you remember in SpongeBob where they go into SpongeBob's brain and there's like a million SpongeBobs running around. Like there's fire everywhere. There's like people pulling stuff out of filing cabinets. I feel like that's what that control room was. Just people going completely crazy. You know, somebody's getting a call from Dana White. Like, is that the boss? All right, here's a good question. Is that the boss that you'd want to hear from the least when there's something wrong? Can you think of another boss?
Other than Dan? Yeah. No, Dana White, you're right. Like if bleep is hitting the fan, like Dana White, I imagine does not play around. Like you are messing with my bottom dollar. You're done in this world. Like I imagine he just kicks people. I imagine he has extras, like extra production people just waiting to replace someone in show. So he can bust in there and be like, you gone. And then some person just walks in who's never worked a day there. And they're like, that's already, hold on. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how nerve-wracking must it be when you look at your phone and it says Dana White and nobody's on air and you're just like...
In the middle of a show.
Hello? Go ahead.
That's so good. No, but I was going to say, I want to get your take on... Because I'm the kind of UFC fan that I show up for the big events. Like, I probably wouldn't have ordered this fight if Masvidal didn't join it. Like, I wasn't going to watch Usman Burns just because I'm like a Masvidal... Like, I have to be a fan of you to order the fight. I'm McGregor. I used to be into Ronda Rousey. I'm the big... Like, you know... what's his name? Like John Bones Jones, whatever. You get my point. I'm kind of, I show up for the big fights. And so I'm a novice. Am I saying that word right? I'm a novice when it comes to I always second guess myself and then I seem stupider than perfect. I actually am.
Steamroll through, baby.
I'm a novice when it comes to UFC. So what was your take on the Aldo fight? Because I was palpably screaming at my TV for them to stop that fight. Like at one point late in that round. And then I love how Aldo gets praised for like not giving up and having the heart of a champion, but it's like he lost at least a year of his life. Because he was just getting pummeled, and I guess he had his arm up blocking his face, kind of. But that's not defending yourself. Were you like me? Everyone I was watching like with on Zoom, I had a little Zoom party. Was
nice.
Like,
thanks for the
ridiculous
invite.
Ridiculous that they're not stopping this fight. That fight should have been stopped. No.
So. It's a couple things, right? You look at Jose Aldo, somebody who has the pedigree that he has, and you can almost separate Jose Aldo's career into pre-Conor McGregor and post-Conor McGregor. And I was tweeting during the fight that I couldn't believe if you would have told me in 2015, in December 2015, when the Aldo-McGregor fight happened and McGregor knocked him out in 13 seconds, I wouldn't have believed that 5 years, you know, post that night, Jose Aldo would be fighting for a title and McGregor would kind of be out of the sport. And not That's because funny. Anything happened, but just because he's made all this money and doesn't really need to fight anymore. So if you would have told me that, I would have been like, wow. But if you look back at Aldo, he's 25-1 pre-McGregor, and then post-McGregor, he's like 3-6. Like he completely fell off.
How did he get that title fight
then? Because the thing is, Henry Cejudo, who's the bantamweight champion, stepped down. He retired. Right. So now it's a vacant title. And they were saying his name really weird. Petr Yan. I don't know what Piotr, whatever they were saying. I couldn't really understand. But he's a bad man. And obviously you saw that. Jose Aldo is a historically incredible featherweight and now moving into bantamweight and trying to get a double championship, right? A double title, even though he doesn't hold it in the featherweight anymore. He's a guy that will not give up, and that's what you heard on the broadcast. Like, he's a guy that's never going to give up. He's a guy that's never going to tap unless you have him in an arm bar and his arm breaks. But to me, when they had that zoom-in cam of Aldo like this, right, with his elbows kind of locked over his head and Jan's just over him getting
the I was blood pout, is like, dude, soaking Tony, I'm out. In my house, I mean, I'm like 3 or 4 whiskeys deep at this point. So, like, I was a little out of my head, but I'm like screaming, Stan, like, what are they doing? He's going to die. Call the fight.
The blood is just all over the canvas. Every time he moves his face, like there's more and more blood.
It's not dripping. It's gushing out. And you saw that blood out like through the whole Masvidal fight. I'm like, there's the Aldo blood.
Right. Like, there was no other blood other than the Aldo blood like from that one fight. And so this is where, you know, as a referee, it's a really tough spot, because you know that Aldo is a guy that, you know, can come back at any moment. And what you're looking for basically as a referee in that instance is, can, is he defending himself in the right way? Is he trying to make moves to get up and do stuff? It probably went 10 seconds too long, 15 seconds too long. But again, in 10 or 15 seconds to Peter Yan, that's like 20, you know, headshots.
That's a year. That's at least 2 years of Aldo's life. Now, see, the crazy thing about this is if we ask Aldo right now, he'd probably praise the official for letting him stay in
for there. Letting him go. Because like, how many times have we seen people stop the fight early? Nate Diaz and Masvidal stopped.
And then they're
early.
Mad, and then the fighter's looking at him like, "What the hell?" Like, I right. get that, and that could have happened, but
for sure.
There has to be, I don't know, man. There needs to be a Chris
title fight.
There needs to be a Chris Cody who's worried about people's lives. Like, I feel like the official is just there trying to not get yelled at by Aldo, I feel like, where he needs to be thinking more about my mindset of let's protect Aldo for his life.
So as you saw in some of the other prelim fights, we had the doctor called in a couple different times for people getting hit in the crotch region. I think it was Junior Dos Santos that got poked in the eye, and they called, you know, a doctor in, and they were saying, look, they can't, it'd be a shame to stop the fight because of a poked eye. And that's happened before in UFC, where people have gotten kind of cheated out of a fight that they still could have fought in by the referees and by the doctors. So that's why it's a really sticky subject when it comes to UFC fans and ref stopping the fight early. I think he stopped it maybe a little bit too late, but you know, it could go either way.
How about that one dude, speaking of illegal kicks, how about that one dude who kneed the guy in the groin twice? And the second time the referee's like, dude, like, I loved being able to hear all this with the fans not there. He's just like, dude, come on. Like, are you serious? Like, and then, so that was funny.
He just kept kicking him in the nuts.
Yeah. And then after the second one, so he gets in trouble, like 10 seconds after he kicks him in the nuts, he kicks him in the nuts again, and the ref is just kind of looking at him like, are you serious? You did it again? And he still doesn't take a point away. And they're like, is he going to take away a point? He can take away a point here. He does not take away a point after two groin shots. And then like 30 seconds later after that, he just knees the guy straight in the face. And then the official's like, dude, three things now? You're making me look bad. 2 points. I am taking two points away from this guy. That was a funny comedic, like, because it was just like they would stop the fight because he did something illegal, and then 20 seconds later he would do something illegal again, and I was cracking up at that. That was
imagine if you're in that position, and obviously I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I think it was the other guy that fought Santos.
Don't matter.
Whatever. Not the point.
Yeah.
If you're in the position where you're that down in a fight, and I'm asking you, Chris Cody, if you're in a position where you're that down in a fight and you're getting your ass dragged the entire, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of the first, second round, are you starting to pull off cheap shots? Is that something that you're going to do?
I mean,
just a little cheap shot here or there.
Yes. To answer your question, I mean, but that's like, if I'm ever in a fight like that, I'm genuinely fighting for my life. Like, these guys are fighting what appears to be for their life while like holding sets of rules and respects, and like, you know, they do a lot of bowing when they do. Like, I saw this one guy choked this guy out. That one of the fights ended with a guy legitimately getting choked out. So yes. Then the guy, the doctors, so all of a sudden this guy's like, I will kill you. I choke you out. He's out. You win. And then he immediately gets into the mode of like, oh my God, rightfully so. He's like praying, and he's this like hoping die, that this right? guy, they're like lifting the guy's legs up in the air, which is a move that I guess you have to do. And I like, so all of a sudden, it's just so crazy how these guys have to be so angry and want to kill somebody. And then as soon as they knock them out, they immediately are like, all right, flip the switch. It's over. Are you okay, sir? Please. Whereas most human beings are designed to, if you're fighting someone to kill them, you actually want to kill them. Like, this fighting world is insane to me.
Fighting for money. And by the way, quick amendment. It was not Junior Dos Santos. He's a different class. It was Leonardo Santos versus Roman Bogatov. That's the guy that was kicking everybody in the nuts, Roman
Bogatov.
I'm
glad you made that mistake and not me.
Yes. Yes. It was the, I want to say it was the Danny, Danny Henry versus Makwan Amirkhani fight, where he puts him in the anaconda choke. Remember, they made a big deal about the anaconda choke? And then all of a sudden, Danny Henry like falls over and he lifts his legs automatically and like tries to like get him back to, but it was bad. Like
the guy's alive now. Like he lives. Yes, people, for everyone here. Like,
but they pan away from him, and then they kind of pan back, and Anik's talking to Amir Khani about stuff, and like you almost still kind of see him like in the background, like on the canvas still. So that was kind of scary. Let's get to the big fight.
Yeah,
Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal. Obviously, I was acting a fool, tweeting, and it's always a dangerous place. I'm going to be very self-absorbed for a second. It's always a dangerous place when you're the one like really carrying the flag for everybody and like being 305 stand up, like backyard to the world stage, like here we are. Happens.
Yeah, it was right? Good. Like, it felt great when you set your tweet out like 3 hours before the fight, like let's go Masvidal Army, we're riding tonight. Exactly, and it gets like exactly. It starts rolling. I saw the retweets, you got like multiple really like you're like feeling good, and then that fight happens and you're just like
when I saw the first couple seconds, I was like, okay, both guys are swinging for the fences. Like there was a punch that Usman threw that was an absolute haymaker. That would have hit Masvidal, would have been a problem. He missed. Masvidal missed on a couple different shots. You could tell that the nerves were really high. And then Usman said, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to go do exactly what I'm going to do, which is a technical win. I'm going to clinch him against the cage. Chris, when I tell you that somebody has 10 minutes of clinch time in a 25-minute fight, like what does that tell you?
Yeah, that was insane. So
he completely took Masvidal off of his game plan. Masvidal wanted to stand up and fight, trade blows. Usman just put him in the corner and tried to stomp all the roaches and then hit him with shoulder stuff. It was such an unaesthetically pleasing fight.
Now, see, I'm, like I said, remember going back to me being a novice in this, the whole time I thought early on, even late in the first round, even though Masvidal clearly won the first round, I was seeing Masvidal's stomach like breathing heavy like late in that first round. So like as me being the novice, the whole fight, I was even then, and then that second round started and he looked like kind of drained. Gassed. So I'm thinking the whole time Masvidal just doesn't look, he looks tired. He doesn't, I don't know what, if it's the 6 days, I don't know if it's Usman's style, but that was just my narrative kind of throughout the whole fight. Like he looks exhausted. But then I hear Chael Sonnen in doing that Ariel recap thing after, and he's like impressed with Masvidal that he lasted the whole fight. Mm-hmm. He thought he did a good fight and that Usman was just a better fighter. So like, I get that point. Like my question to you as someone who's more of an expert on this than I am, like, did you see Masvidal being a little out of shape in this fight, or do you just give credit to Usman?
Both 100% of both, because when you look back at Masvidal taking a fight on 6 days' notice, a fight of this caliber, right? Like this is a title fight. This is somebody that this is in a normal training camp. You're taking 6 to 8 weeks to prepare for this guy. And whichever guy it is, and you got to give credit to both Usman and Masvidal, because Usman's taking a title fight, right? He's got to defend his title on a guy who's probably the most dangerous guy in the UFC right now on 6 days' notice, right? Like, and that's something that was underappreciated and under talked about. But for Masvidal, when you're putting in 6 to 8 weeks of busting ass, of fighting, of sparring, of you know cardio work, of all of that different stuff, like it changes the way that you come into a fight. And for Masvidal to do radio hits, I think he was with us a couple times. Like he's been just kind of in quarantine, not really doing anything in the middle of a contract dispute, no less, to come up and say, hey, look, I'll do the fight was absolutely impressive. I did see him gas, and I think that's a byproduct of not having the correct training camp and not getting completely ready for an opponent, you know, like you would. But at the end of the day, I thought both of them were gassed in that first round. Like when Usman came down after the thing, put his arms on the top of the ring and was like breathing heavy and they were putting the ice packs on him. I'm like, okay, wow, that was definitely a Masvidal round. I'm really interested to see what Usman's going to do because him being a national champion wrestler, there's no way that they're going to continue to stand up and trade blows. Like I knew it was going to go to the floor or to the cage at some point.
Is the whole 6 days notice thing a little misleading? Because I feel like Masvidal like knew that he was probably like the next guy up if something were to happen to Burns. So I'm sure it's not like he was, you know, eating McDonald's and stuff and like totally not training. Like I'm sure he was like I'm sure he's been training for months, not knowing when a fight could pop up.
Thing is, Chris, we're in the middle of COVID. You can't spar with the people you usually spar with, even though he had a lot of people that he could because they were testing and doing a lot of stuff. But you're not in a normal world of, okay, I'm going to train, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Everybody was quarantined. You're trying to figure out exactly what's going on, and you just don't have the normal assets that you're usually used to working with. So the 6 days' notice in the middle of a quarantine is big. And also,
it's even more.
As I It, of course. And even so, the fact that he was in the middle of a contract dispute, like who knew that that UFC was going to come, all right, we'll meet the number that you want for a new contract and you get a title shot right off the bat. Like, who would have thought that would have been the case even 2 weeks ago? I understand where he's coming from.
Do you think Masvidal regrets posting the picture of himself eating pizza on the way to the fight, in like on his private jet, on the PJ, on his way to Abu Dhabi? He kind of had like pizza in his mouth, kind of giving off like, I'm ready, I can eat pizza. And I remember Usman being interviewed by SportsCenter like a couple days later and being like, he thinks he's impressing me by showing me he's eating pizza. Like, no, I'm not eating pizza right now because I'm training for a fight. No, like, and then like, it's funny to hear though that back and forth, and then you see the fight and like, you kind of have to put your arms up like, Masvidal, maybe don't eat pizza a couple days before a fight.
For sure. And another thing too is, did you see how shredded Kamaru Usman was?
Oh,
like when he took off his shirt, it was like, dude, has this guy ever eaten like a carb before? Like, does he eat cheeseburgers and pizza like the rest of us? No, because he is like carved of granite. It was incredible. And I mean, look, when you, the dirty secret about UFC and about combat sports is the weight cut, right? Like, people don't want to talk about it. Jorge Masvidal dropped 20 pounds in the matter of a couple days.
He was like, I saw that. What was that doing where he's like laying on down with like blankets just covering him? Does that make you sweat? I'm pardon my
ignorance. Yeah, it's just keeping like the heat in so you can, you know, lose weight and stuff. But he's Masvidal walks around at 190, right? Like, he's a guy that is a normal guy. He has to cut weight to get to welter at 170. So that's going to give you what, 20 some odd pounds in a couple of days. Like, that drains you. And that's some of the worst parts about making weight, is the lengths that a lot of these combat sport people have to do to get to their limit.
And Masvidal, so Masvidal loves his food. This is something that I have been reporting on from when he comes to the studio, because I'm the one that just goes and runs and orders whatever food he wants. And that dude, when he's like not training for a fight, like, that dude wants to order like French fries. Like, I mean, like, he eats good in terms of quantity. Like, I don't know, like, you know, because he works out so much. Pardon me, I'm burping. Because he works out so much, he, when he's not, like, that dude throws down. It's not like he's eating like kale salads all the time, is my point.
No. He's a guy that's going to eat good, and that's almost to the detriment of the weight cut. But he made weight, and he's never had an issue with that. But you can tell Usman is just at a different level when it comes to dietary, like what he's doing. Like, the cut doesn't have to be so severe for Usman because he's in such good shape. Where, and you can see this a lot in like the light heavies or the heavyweights, and that's why Daniel Cormier can go from light heavy to heavyweight, because the weight cut isn't so drastic. And that's why I'm really excited for Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier 3 August 15th, only on ESPN pay-per-view. Quick plug there. But that's one of the most fascinating things. And if you see people having a lot of stamina issues, it could be tied to the weight cut and how hard they had to push their body that week before the fight.
I want to move on here, but I feel like if we just isolate this last 20 minutes that we did and we send it to Ariel Helwani, I feel like he's listening to it and he's going to be like, decent.
Ariel taught me everything I know. That's like, what I mean, like, so when Ariel came from, I want to say it was Yahoo, when he was covering sports, when he was covering MMA from over there, and he came over to ESPN, I was his first podcast producer. Obviously, he's got 30 different producers, but I would sit in to the Ariel Helwani show every Monday and listen to MMA for 6 hours for like a good year and a half. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, Ariel taught me everything I know.
I have a shameful admission in a text that I sent Ariel over the weekend, and I'm not just dropping that to be like, yeah, I have Ariel's phone number and I can text him, because I do. But I sent him a text on Saturday night. Like, this guy's live tweeting this stuff. Like, he's there. I don't think he's there, but he is working. Like, this is his, like, it's as if like he's covering, this is during the event. I'm texting him during his work day. And I just, it was a gambling thing. All I texted him, I think I hit him with like, if Masvidal wins, is it going the distance or is he going to like knock him out? Like, that was my question.
It would have to be a knockout.
Yeah, and that's what he's like. That's what he said. He's like, if
he responded,
he did, like, quick, dude. Wow. Ariel was like, in my experiences with him,
he's the nicest guy.
Dude. Like, genuinely,
there's nobody nicer in sports media than Ariel Helwani, and like, I stick to that fact forever.
Anytime I've emailed him, he always sends a response email like, "Oh, thank you so much for having me. That was so great." Like, if I thank him for being on or something, like, he's the nicest dude. So I knew I was going to get a response. It was just whether or not, and he just wrote, "Ha ha."
Well, no, because I think I wrote in the thing that I'm embarrassed that I'm texting you right now while you're working, but not embarrassed enough that I'm not going to text you. Like that,
right.
I prefaced it with that. So he like was like, ha ha. And then he actually gave me his response that if Masvidal wins, that it would be a knockout. But his the way he wrote if, I like said to my friend, I'm like, I don't think he thinks Masvidal's winning. Like the way he made if like such a big, like, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that I was embarrassed that I did that. I ended up losing money on the bet because I bet Masvidal. Regardless, I digress. I think.
How about
I
the
think,
person that's that put up 200 grand for that. Masvidal? Did you see that? Like, yikes. Anyway,
I'm sure that guy's got dough though. Like, if you're putting that fine. Much, you know, I'm sure
he's fine.
But Ariel would be happy with that, the 25 minutes we just did. That's what I was getting at. Let's move on. Do you want to talk about next? We have two more things I want to get to. Do you want to talk about NBA players discovering the shotgunning of a beer? Or do you want to talk about me doing something controversial with the grid of death?
Let's do beer quickly and then get to the grid of death. Because beer is always an important aspect of the show.
I'm confused why all these NBA players are like flaunting the ability to like shotgun a beer. Like, why is the quarantine associated with like their like, is this them like having college days? Like, are they rekindling their college day spirit? Living in these hotels, like what's going on? Have you been digesting all of the bubble, like social media stuff?
I have been digesting it, and it's cool because a lot of the guys that are in the NBA now didn't have social media back in the day. So you couldn't see a video of JJ Redick at Duke at a frat party, like shotgunning multiple beers and taking jello shots. It just didn't exist.
Plus they're too young to do that in those days. So now they get to like relive all the, I know, but you know what I mean? As far as like, if like these college kids are probably doing that, but they don't post about it because they're not technically 21. My point is
right.
Like, they're getting to relive these college type years as adults.
So one of the cool things that I think about when I see all the NBA bubble content is I think back to my time in AAU and travel ball, where me and all my buddies would go to Orlando for a week, right? We would play at the Disney Classic or we would play at whatever the tournament was.
Those are the
and
best.
You would be there. Oh my God.
The best. Travel tournaments I did for baseball.
So good. So you'd be there with all your boys. You'd be in the lazy river at the pool. Then you'd come up and you're like, all right, we got three games today, boys. Like, we're playing at 11, we're playing at 1, we're playing at 4. After that 4 o'clock game, it's like, let's do it. Where are we going? So imagine that to the nth degree of I've got millions of dollars. I can kind of do whatever I want. And they're basically opening the grounds for me to do anything. I would be playing golf all day. I'd be doing the same thing, drinking a bunch of beer, shotgunning stuff. It's the adult like fantasy camp, right? Like that everybody wants to do is like, I want to be an NBA player for the day. They're basically doing it and going back to those roots of the AAU tournaments where you could just go out, play and have fun with your friends. Like I wish I could do that.
I would love to play a Grand Theft Auto version game in the Disney bubble right now. So I could just walk around with a character through the Disney bubble. And it's like, oh, look, there's a dock right there. Ben Simmons is fishing with Josh Richardson. Oh, look, there's Chris Haynes doing a ding dong dash on Mark Stein. I don't know if you saw that. Chris Haynes, Yahoo, I guess, like was like filming himself knocking on Mark Stein's door and scurrying away. Like, I just love the idea. Oh, there's Joel Embiid in the calf at the All-Star Sports Resort. Like, I just love that in this world that I'm used to, the Disney Orlando area where all these hotels, the boardwalk. Right. Like,
it's uniquely just, for us, you know what I mean? Because like, we know it.
NBA players everywhere there that I could be like, oh, look, there's him. Like, that's a GTA style game. Obviously, we shouldn't probably be like sniping people. So a lot kinder, more just lovable GTA.
A more G-rated.
In the Disney bubble right now. Like, I would pay $100 a day for that right now.
So you just gave a remembrance for me on something that I thought of like 10 years ago, okay? I wanted to pitch a game, and whether it be 2K, EA Sports, whoever wants to do it. Well, Rockstar would probably have to do it, but they can't get the NBA licensing. Anyways, what I thought of was a franchise mode in 2K or in NBA Live or whatever that was basically GTA, but also the game at the same time. Mm. So you would live as the person. They kind of did this with the neighborhood or whatever it's called with you know, the franchise mode now or the my player mode where you can walk around, you could do stuff. But I mean like really do stuff. You go and buy a car. You can drive the car. Mm-hmm. Like you hang out with your friends. Oh my God, I got to get to the game. Like you miss the game. Yeah. You get in trouble. Like the GTA style, but with the actual game in like embedded into it, I think would be a crazy good, you know, hit and success. The problem is those kind of games would never get, you know, green lit by the NBA. But imagine you know, you're playing as your guy, Chris Cody. He's a, you know, shooting guard for the Miami Heat. You guys finish a game, you beat the Sacramento Kings, and you're going to the club afterwards. And then all of a sudden it's you going to the club and like playing the actual game. I think that would be a huge hit.
I think back to the bubble and the hotel rooms and the, and these travel trips that we used to take, like with our teams, you never want to be like, I never wanted, cause like there's always one room that's like the cool hangout room. Like that's where you guys are all playing video games. I never wanted that to be my room. Like I want that to be my friend Steve on the team's room. So I can go. So I have my room that I can get to and just have peace and quiet. Yes, like
escape.
Cause then if it's your room, it's like 11 PM at night. It's like, guys, I'm ready to go to sleep. But everyone's
still game
like
at 7 a.m. tomorrow, by the way.
Like, so it's always key for it to not be your room to the hangout room. It's very
100%.
Now I think, I don't know. We've kind of gone 30 minutes here. I think I might just want to tease this topic. Cause I think we might talk about it national. So I don't know if I want to get into it. All I know is that Give us a pro tease. I did something that I think some people will have an issue with this whole grid of death. I had a grid of death punishment and I did something with it. And I'm cool with it because everyone seems to have kind of forgotten about this grid of death. No one's paying really punishments. So that's kind of the reason that I felt I could do this, but I'm just going to leave that there for the people to digest on. And we might talk about it on the national show today. So this is very exciting. Tony, I feel like we did a decent job here. I mean, it was a little sportsy. We went hard on the sports, but hey, it's Monday and we had something cool to react to. So
big fight. Like, we actually had a sport, like, you know, something to actually react to. And it was an excellent local hour, if we can't say so ourselves.
See, like, and people don't even realize how amazing we are, Tony, because there's stuff going on in the background. People are moving. This was a hectic morning. And me and you, we turned on the mics and we did it, baby. We
hashtag it. Content. Hashtag Chris content.
Have a good one, everyone.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.